Hey everyone, it's your host here, Jared Taylor, with the Slice of Healthcare podcast. I'm here with Cody Simmons, the CEO of DermaSensor. Cody, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me. And doing quite well. A couple weeks past FDA clearance. Can't be upset about that. So
I'm super excited for you and the team. That is such exciting news. I know you had a lot of buzz. I know a lot of outlets covered it. That is one of the best feelings, right? As someone running these companies, when you see that added attention and people are, you know, you're getting the congratulations and all that stuff. So kudos to you and the team. Let's dive right in. Give us the kind of 30 seconds on you, and then a high level overview of DermaSensor if someone hasn't heard of the company, but I'm sure they have the last couple of weeks.
Happy to. So a bit of myself, backgrounds in business and bioengineering. So I was in a biomaterials lab at Stanford for graduate work, and then at Genentech for 4 years, mainly commercial strategy and business development roles. And DermaSensor was the third health tech startup that I was a part of launching. So the company is actually 15 years old. So it was formed in 2009. It was a fully virtual startup, so no full-time operators, kind of doing early exploratory R&D work. You can almost think of it as like a, you know, NIH, SBIR stage company with collaborators out of Boston University who invented this field of spectroscopy. So my co-founders who formed the company and kind of sponsored some of that work early on, Dr. Maurice Ferre and Chris Dewey, ultimately said, okay, the clinical data is looking encouraging. We have this 30-pound microwave size device, but there's a vision for miniaturizing that. How well will that work? We don't exactly know, but, you know, we're optimistic. And so I was introduced to them in early 2016. As Maurice Ferre, who's a very successful medical device entrepreneur, so he's had two exits. He sold, the most recent was Mako Surgical, went public, sold to Stryker for $1.6 billion. He's raised, I think, like $600 million for his current company in total, Insight Tech. As he put it, we're looking for someone to turn our research project into a company. And so that's when I joined in 2016, and it took many more millions of dollars and years than we hoped to miniaturize that large microwave size device down to this. Really excited to now be past the FDA finish line. Now, as my board says, now the real work begins. Now you actually have to sell products and build a company. I'm honestly very excited. But also a word that keeps coming to mind is relieved that it didn't flush, you know, nearly 8 years of my work and also tons of employee effort and $25 million in R&D expenses and investors' money down the drain. So, very relieved about that and very excited for what's to come.
Let's talk a little bit about dermatologists and, you know, in their world, like how are they feeling about this device?
Sure. So what we're doing, and as of January 12th, when the FDA cleared our device, for the first time in America, PCPs and their patients will be able to receive a real-time quantitative result for skin cancer risk. That's the power and excitement, I think, around this product. So hundreds of thousands of frontline providers are very excited about that, right? So when a patient points at a suspicious lesion, I've got a good little demo mole on my arm. I joke, I was born for this job. I've got a great 5-millimeter nevus right on my forearm. Hey, what do you think, doctor? Should I go see a dermatologist or not? They're not specialists. They're not highly trained in evaluating skin conditions, but that interaction happens all the time. Or the family doctor or internal medicine doctor or OBGYN happens to notice something and they're like, oh, is that, you know, should I refer that or what do I do? So we're helping those non-specialists upskill their capabilities, right? So the goal is to bring more dermatologist level skin cancer triage to primary care. So that's kind of the focus of the company and the product. To your question about dermatologists, they're very excited and encouraging about this because they've actually been for decades trying to get primary care physicians more adept or capable at assessing suspicious lesions. So there's a tool called a dermatoscope. It's a polarized magnifying glass that basically helps you visualize different structures of the lesion. And because it uses polarized light, you can kind of see interesting features beneath that you can't see with your naked eye. The issue is it requires, a lot of training. Most people would say at least tens of hours of training to really become proficient at it, to where it improves your performance. And PCPs are responsible for thousands of diseases, right? They can't spend tens or hundreds of hours becoming expert just in skin cancer, right? What about, the 50, 100 other specialties, and then each of those has multiple diseases, the most recent literature we've seen is that 8% of PCPs use dermoscopy, which when you think about it, it's a pretty big number because there's 300,000 PCPs. So, 25,000-30,000 PCPs use dermoscopy to some degree. But what about the other 92%? Right. And so, I think it shows that this is a real unmet need that both the dermatology community and primary care community are kind of united in addressing. But the burden on PCPs to get better at this is really too high and has not been adopted by the large majority of PCPs. So we kind of provide that automated lesion assessment that achieves a lot of the same objective as learning dermoscopy, but it takes 15 minutes to read our instruction manual, not tens of hours.
It's super interesting. And one of the things that everyone probably asks you nowadays, you can't go anywhere without being asked is, what is the devices like? Are you using AI? What's the use of AI? I'm sure you get that quite a bit, right? That's
it's funny. We're like the old school. We're predictive AI, right? Up until a year and a half ago, that was cool. Now it's all Gen AI, right? So we use that. Deep learning, machine learning techniques were used extensively. Of the 10,000 pages in total that we submitted to FDA. Maybe not hundreds of pages, but there was a lot of detail on the algorithm techniques. FDA has become very, very sophisticated in the AI area in recent years, especially in radiology. I think just in radiology, there's over 100 algorithms cleared to help radiologists assess radiology images. So they're quite familiar with a lot of, overfitting bias and a lot of these kind of aspects, what they look closely at your training data sets and tuning data sets, things like that. We're very fortunate in the sense that, we're a novel modality, but our data, because we're not taking images, the first paper on applying some kind of algorithm or software to photos of skin lesions was published over 30 years ago. But there's not a single product on the market today that anyone can use, dermatologists, PCPs, patients, that provides any kind of automated assessment of a lesion, of a skin lesion for skin cancer risk, not one. So it's been around for a long time, but imaging is really prone. I'm not an expert on imaging. My understanding from the experts is because it's a photo and it's two-dimensional data, there's all these different biomarkers that algorithms, like they've done studies showing, the algorithm wasn't really assessing the lesion. It was picking up on the red markers that doctors would draw. And that helped it figure out risk level. Cause like the doctor was circling it before they did a biopsy, right? There's all kinds of weird and like lighting and distance and skin type, like, and what camera you're using, that can really mess with photo-based performance. And so ours were emitting and reflecting light. And so the AI is picking up on relatively standardized cellular level features versus photos that could have, thousands of different biomarkers and like which ones really matter. And, it seems like on this data set, these matter, but then you test it on a new data set, like FDA requires real world, and then it didn't perform well, right? So yeah, I think different technologies have their pros and cons. But yeah, really excited about the AI aspect of things. But I make sure to explain to folks this is not constantly evolving, right? FDA is not allowing companies, oh yeah, for cancer detection, you can just change your algorithm willy-nilly. You develop the algorithm, you lock it before the data is unblinded, so you know the kind of true performance. And then if you want to update the algorithm, you go through a new process, some kind of new validation assessment, showing that the new algorithm is actually better than the prior one.
Super interesting. I mean, you said it yourself, right? Your investors say now the what do they say, the
The
real
real
work?
work, now the real
Yeah, the
work.
real work. What's next then for you? What first off, what's next, and then also what excites you? I'm sure there's a lot that excites you in terms of what you can share with us here today.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's been an incredible first couple of weeks post-clearance. We've received really widespread media coverage, which has been exciting. A lot of inbound interest from large health systems. Again, that this is a major unmet clinical need that has been unmet for decades, right? I think the first guidelines on use of dermoscopy, so a tool to help with lesion assessment, was in the 80s. And so that's been around for a long time. Like I said, PCPs haven't really adopted it in a meaningful way. But the importance of helping of PCPs better assessing skin lesions is, if anything, higher today. Dermatology access issues abound. It's been one of AAD's focus is how do we improve access to dermatology? And less than 10% of Americans that are at risk for skin cancer receive an annual skin cancer exam. But even with that, there's major dermatology access issues. So how do you provide effective skin cancer exams for the other 90% of the population? Dermatologists just can't do it from a capacity and infrastructure standpoint. It's just not possible. And so we think kind of upskilling or upleveling the capabilities of 300,000 primary care doctors when there's only 10,000 derms, that's the way to do it. So that's really what we're focused on, and really excited that health systems, commercial partners, payers are interested in getting us there. But yeah, so we're expecting to start getting devices out in a few weeks here. Given the demand and interest, we're really just starting off in terms of private practices, just in Pennsylvania and Florida, but also working with a lot of large national health systems as well.
You ready for my random question of every episode, Cody? That is
Let's hear
all.
it. Why? Just rise. Do you want me to show you the device? I realize I
Oh
haven't asked.
yeah. If you can,
I've got one
I know
sitting
you
here.
popped it up
So
there. Yeah, show us again.
it takes 30 seconds. So the whole process from literally when the patient or decides, okay, yeah, it's a concerning lesion, let me use this. So you get Envision in the nursing station or exam room counter, right? Wherever it sits, all you need is an electric plug. Like that's it. Doesn't even need an active Wi-Fi connection. So I just touched the screen, kind of woke up. First step's a calibration step. So that's just making sure that nothing's blocking the fiber optic probe tip. So great, calibration complete. And so the whole process here, so you can see that mole on my arm, whole process here will take around 25, 30 seconds. And so the voiceover is, okay, we're taking completely non-invasive, harmless tissue samples. Each one's measuring about half a millimeter of tissue non-invasively. So picking it up, putting it down in different areas to make sure we sample different parts of the lesion. Instead of sending that to a laboratory dermatologist, the FDA cleared algorithm does an immediate assessment. The result is monitored. So that's kind of the low risk or negative results. The company's pivotal study with over 1,000 patients showed that's a 97% chance of being benign. So not positive for any of the three cancer types, the common three skin cancer types. So I'm not that worried about your lesion. The device isn't worried about it. You're good for now. See you again in a year. That's it.
That is cool.
And a positive result, I should say, interestingly, was as high. We give a 1 to 10 scale. Positive results, whereas got as high likelihood as 61% of being cancer. So it kind of gives you that immediate, not an exact probability, right? Because every patient population and doctor, you know, is different, but gives you that clear quantitative and sense of relative risk.
It's so clean. Like, your kudos to on the I don't think I've ever said kudos before this episode, and I've said it like six times. But to the design too, like, very clean, sleek.
Oh, thank you. I'll admit we were hoping to get it a bit smaller early on, but then in speaking with clinicians, they actually were like, but if it's too small, it doesn't feel like a medical device. It feels like a consumer product. And so they kind of like that it's, you know, kind of a bit meaty. I think the perception to them in part, but also just to the patients, right? Like, this isn't some little gadget I bought on Amazon. This is like a real medical device that I'm using to assess you for cancer risk. So yeah, no, appreciate that. I'll pass that on to our COO, who is point on all things design. The only thing I got credit for was the stickers. It used to just be the button, and I was like, what if we did like a wrap? Do you think that would look cool? And some people are skeptical, but I kind of was like, I think it'll look good. Let's just do it. And people, I think people ended up liking it. But anyway, that's the only credit
I think the
I get
sticker
on the
makes a lot
design.
of sense. My last question for you,
Oh,
Cody,
sure.
is I ask people to put on their investor hat.
Oh, okay.
Outside of you, it can be a specific area of healthcare or
Okay.
specific companies. You're building a portfolio with four areas or four companies. It could be a mix of both. Who are you backing? What area are you backing?
What areas am I backing? Can I give two?
Yeah, two works.
Okay. So the two that come to mind, and they're both not like our company exactly, but areas I'm familiar with, I'd say because of the work of our company. One is tools that can upskill the capability of non-specialists, right? Kind of improving. So, you know, similar theme as us, but there's a lot of companies that are doing that. There's automated AI fundus imaging companies. You know, there's ones that are unregulated devices, kind of providing information easily to generalists to kind of help them improve their decision making. So I think that's one. And then the other one I would say is really ones that are easing the administrative and workflow burden on all healthcare professionals. I mean, you know, physician burnout is such a real problem. And there's all those stats on medical mistakes kill more people than the next, you know, 100 problems. You know, it's such an issue. And it's really more a systems and infrastructure. It's not that we have incompetent, bad clinicians left and right. It's just they're having to do so much. And especially with the back and forth with insurance companies. And so I think tools that like the, you know, Gen AI for automated clinical note scribes and things like that can get clinicians back to what they were trained to do and want to do, which is taking care of patients and not dealing with note taking and billing and arguing with payers half their day. I think things that can help with that, especially given the huge clinician shortages in so many areas, I think that's a really important area too.
Well, Cody, I want to thank you once again for joining me on the Slice Healthcare podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm so excited for you and the team, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thanks for having me.